too.
Just give me patience, yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Up the pack. Oh man, I'm excited. Why am I? I'm always excited.
I know it might be excited too.
It might be the meth.
It might be.
We were just talking about that. So this is Alicia Kurtz.
Hi.
She is an emergency physician based in Sacramento, California. Mm-hmm. SACTO, the Bay Area, and back down. Kelly is with it. Put they Mac down. Give me love, California.
Oh, we're gonna stop now? So ready to.
We just got started. People are coming on in. Adam Sturdivant's here.
Hi.
All kinds of people are coming in. Krista Thomas, what up, fam? All right, here's the thing. The reason Alicia's with us today is she happens to host a podcast called Real Talk, and is a expert on the wellness of our frontline healthcare professionals, physicians in particular.
Yes.
And I was interested because, you know, this is part of our Vituity series. We want to like figure out ways to solve problems that all of us are suffering with. And I think she has some ideas, and it relates to sharing stories. Now, I know nothing about this because
literally,
I just trust intuitively that a fellow physician from the Central Valley who trained in Fresno, which is where my family lives,
yes,
and I know that place, so I know you got good training,
yes,
because the meth, all
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. All of the meth.
Yeah, so
all of it.
How did you get into like wellness and stuff?
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Interestingly, even though you don't know I'm going to say this, it all started in my residency. So it was a perfect segue. So I had the incredible privilege of doing my emergency medicine residency in Fresno, California, which if you don't know a lot about the Valley, like, by the way, California has all these valleys. No, the Valley.
No,
like
the Valley.
The actual Valley of
the
California.
Great Central Valley.
Yes, thank you. Is an area that's historically very underserved. They have a lot of migrant families, a lot of indigent families, a lot of people with no insurance, et cetera, it goes on. And so I trained at this giant monstrosity of a hospital and an ER called Community Regional Medical Center. Old school docs would call it UMC, but it changed before I ever got there. And it's a hard place to work. I mean, it's constant. They have 100 and something beds in the ER alone. The acuity rate is very high. We're really busy. You see everything. And then at some point during my like third year, I noticed that the culture in our residency, while everyone was awesome, was really suffering, just really struggling, because it's a hard place to work. And you see a lot of really terrible things. There's a lot of really violent gang stuff that goes on. There's a lot of really sad cases of patients that didn't otherwise have care or access to care. And they come in and you're diagnosing cancer in somebody who just thought they had belly pain for 5 years.
Can I interject?
Yeah.
So I did my third and fourth year, like surgery and ER rotation in that hospital before it became CRMC. Yeah. And those were some of the most memorable cases, mm-hmm, because it was like young gang related violence, shot, died on the table, like my hands on his aorta, like crazy stuff, like you're saying,
absolutely,
and a new diagnosis of cancer. All that is, she's not making this up. And
right,
you guys who work in these kind of scenarios understand what this is about. And the thing is, there's no processing for this. So you just are like, take a couple suck it ups and don't call me in the morning.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the key being that you deal with one of these cases, it's very tragic, pediatric or a young person, et cetera. And then you have this list of, I mean, the lobby is always full of patients just waiting to be seen. And so there is never really a good beat. There's no time to just stop and say, how did that make me feel? Or that was really messed up. Or that was way more powerful than the things I see on TV, which are not always real. They're scripted, but this was real life. This is a real family. That was a real person I had to just tell, I'm sorry, your son was in the wrong place at the wrong time and got caught in the crossfire of a literal gang fight, and he's dead now. And we didn't have space for that.
And Natalie Rachel says, no time to debrief. Move along to the next one.
Exactly right. True. Mm-hmm. Exactly true. And that's definitely true everywhere, but extra in Fresno. And so my co-chief residents and I, big shout out to Jeremy and Steve. I doubt they're listening because they both have new babies, but still shout out to them. The three of us had this idea because we're sort of obsessed with these storytelling podcasts like The Moth. Any NPR nerd friends out there? I know you're out there. All the doctors listen to NPR.
I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air.
That's right. That's right.
WHYY in Philadelphia.
Nina Totenberg. Whatever. Yeah. Love these people. Ira Glass is my spirit animal.
He is awesome.
He is. Yeah. And so I had this idea that was like, why do we not do this in healthcare? Why do we not stop and not tell our fun, like, cocktail stories? I'm sorry you found a Buzz Lightyear. Where in that guy? Like, we all talk about that stuff. But why don't we stop and talk about the things that are really hard or powerful or meaningful or thrilling or just devastating? And instead, we kind of kept catering to this, like, iron doc mentality. There's a pride that comes with not being fazed by things, right? Like, you're proud of yourself when you make it through three pediatric codes in one day without being fazed, but you are fazed. Like, the reality is that on the inside, you're really not okay. Like, nobody normal would be okay with that. And so we started this program that we call Real Talk, where we started with our residency. So it was a senior resident, although now the model is any provider can share a story in front of a room of their peers about anything that has affected them personally in their time working in healthcare. This could be a particular case that was meaningful for you or that went badly or that went really well. It could be a specific patient that stands out to you for a reason. It could be like, I had a baby or I got married or I got divorced or my mom died or something that happened while you were working in healthcare. For us, it was during residency, but it applies after residency too. And you share that story in something between 7 and maybe 15 minutes. There are no slides. There's no point at the end. There's no, this is my takeaway for you. It's just your story and why you're telling it. So maybe it's, you know, I've heard a story before where it was like, my mom died of breast cancer. And so whenever I see patients in the ER who have cancer, I really sit down and I pause and I say, do you know what these drugs are? Do you understand the side effects? Have you thought about chemo? Do you know how far along your disease process is? All the things they had wished someone had done for them when their mom was struggling with that. So for them, the story was about how cancer patients are really special to them. And it turns out that everybody has a story, right? So at the end of this one person sharing theirs, we put up one or two discussion questions that pull out the theme of that story and gives everyone in the room a chance to share in small groups that facilitates conversation that your team would otherwise never have had, right? When am I going to stop and be like, hey, Z, I want to talk to you about this like really deeply emotional thing that happened to me on shift because I would love to process it. And I think it would help us understand each other better and work better together on shift. Like, we don't do that. That's not classically you're trained.
In fact, that's grounds for a psych consult. Like, if someone does that, you're just like, wait, what? You know, because I'll never, I mean, and these comments are amazing too. So when Janet says, when my first patient died, I went to break room and cried, and an experienced nurse came in and got after me. As an experienced nurse now, I hope I never get that way. And this is the thing, my experience with this was, you know, as I became a more jaded attending and started to get, you know, the moral injury that comes with years of working in a major facility, the students would come to me and say, you know, that last case really affected me for whatever reason. And it took that, like the student coming to me and going, this is my experience with this. And it was hard. How do you deal with it? And I'm like, how do I deal? What? Deal with what? I've built a wall so thick around myself. I can't feel anything. But if you really ask me, if you put me in psychotherapy or put me on some kind of drug, it will all come out in a torrent. So did you set this up then in residency?
Right. Yeah. So it started in my residency as a formal part of the conference curriculum. this part, I think I will never stop being so proud of the fact that Fresno, the administration stood behind us and like let us just do this. So instead of having our wellness lectures, the wellness part of our mandatory conferences be like, hey guys, you should sleep more and eat vegetables, even though there's not a single one in the hospital. Like instead of that, they let us do this instead. So every one of our senior residents had to give one of their stories as part of the mandatory conference curriculum. I'll tell you that the room was slammed. Like every month there were almost every resident was there. Even the overnight people would stay and sleep in their car and come in.
You got goosebumps.
No, you're like, no one wants to miss this, right? Like no one wants to miss this part. And then what we saw in the end was that the culture amongst our friends blossomed. I mean, it was, there were these two, my favorite part, there's these two guys. One was my classmate. One was a little bit behind us. They did not get along. Very strong personalities.
And I've so, never seen that happen.
No, not in medicine.
In residency for medicine. No, we all get along great.
Yeah. Every single male in residency gets along with all
Weak,
the other males.
Total sieve. Like, I'm a wall. She's a sieve.
Totally true. But yeah, so these two guys really didn't get along. And so naturally, when we were making these small groups, we forced them to be together. And so after a couple of months of doing this, one of them came to me and said, listen, I'm never going to like that guy. Like, I'm never going to like that guy. But I find myself being so much less irritated with him on shift because I actually understand him now. I know who he is. I know where he came from. We're never going to be friends, but I don't just feel this like, go away thing deep inside me anymore. So what we found is that it facilitated conversations that we'd never had. It made it normal to have them on shift. So we would stop, you know, if you had a really bad case, it was now normal for the senior resident to say, hey, middle resident, we just had a bad case. Can you go cover the zone for a minute? I just need like 5 minutes. And you would take the other resident who ran that case and say, do you want to talk? Do you want to go outside? There was one day when one of my attendings said to me, he came in for the morning shift right as I finished a horrible, horrible case at the end of my overnight. And he said, everybody else covered the zone. Alicia and I are going for a walk. And we just went out in the parking lot and we walked around for like 10 minutes. And we just talked about it. And no one had ever done that before.
This is like a foreign country you're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, exactly.
The culture of medicine does not admit this kind of behavior,
No, it's Alicia. Not allowed. It's literally not allowed.
It's not only not allowed, it's an existential threat to the wall that we build around ourselves.
Right.
And so the question I have for you is, did you find resistance actually? Because I'll tell you, there's ego defense around not letting people see that you're a human being. Oh, what if the patients find out that we're actually upset? Well, they're going to stop coming to CRMC and, you know, they're going to go to the other ER. They have no choice.
Right.
You know, also, Antala. But yeah, I mean, how did...
Sure.
Yeah.
What I will tell you is that I have learned something beautiful about humanity. And that is that if you, as an administrator, as a leader, make space for something like this, which speaks to the fact that you actually value it. You're not just saying you do, but you actually do because you created space for it. If you do that, people will share. They will watch each other. It will be a few people the first month, a few more the next month, and by the fourth or fifth month. So to jump ahead a little bit, when I entered Vituity, I got very fortunate that some of the leadership, this program we had was featured on MRAP, another very popular emergency medicine podcast.
My people.
Yeah, they're really great.
Yeah.
They featured us as just a piece of like, hey, you could do this in your program. And one of the leaders at Vituity, Greg Miller, heard it and I was a brand new, like just signed on partner. And he pulled me aside and said, hi, I'm the CMO. Do you think attendings could benefit from this thing I heard you're doing on MRAP? And I said, yes, everyone would benefit from doing this. And so he said, let's do this at our sites in Vituity. Let's teach our normal ER sites, like our actual attending physician groups, to do this together. And so now we host in-person sessions. We train different sites to do this. We do it at regional conferences or at big national conferences. You can do this literally anywhere. All you need is a storyteller and a bunch of people willing to break into small groups and talk to each other. We've done it as grand rounds with like doctors and nurses and techs all in the same room from the whole hospital. We've done it for just one department of the hospital. We've done it for like medical staff groups. We've done it for just the local ER partner group. It translates to any specific group of people that work together. And so then what we've seen there is like there was a guy. So Marco, wave, come over here. This is the producer of the podcast version. Hi, Marco. Marco stands in the back, obviously, like listening to the sound and how everything is going. Because on our podcast now, everything's recorded live. And Marco was in the back, and there was this guy I will not name because I'm sure someday he'll see this. But he was standing next to Marco, and he was like standing there. And I gave an intro, and I said something like, you know, when we talk about physician wellness, raise your hand if you roll your eyes. And everyone raises their hand because I also am so sick of talking about it. Like, show me the money. Let's change it. Stop telling me to sleep more, right? And this guy leans over to Marco, and he's like, I'm rolling my eyes right now. And he starts kind of like giving this, he's like laying shade about my program.
Throwing shade at you? That's awesome.
To Marco. And he's like, but then the storyteller happened to be a friend of this guy's. And that storyteller, who is one of the episodes on the podcast, was talking about how he's now a leader in emergency medicine. He and his wife had a hard time getting pregnant. And they got a lot of bad news. They went to the ER. They went to the hospital. They had a lot of bad news along the way. And he's talking about taking care of a woman who was similar age to him, who is like, for those of you who are medical, she's a G5P0, right? So she's tried and tried and tried. And he has to be the one to tell her that she had a miscarriage. And while for a lot of us, like if I'm being honest, for me, I feel bad for those people, but I kind of just roll with the punches. For him, it was very different. It was way more impactful. And so he's telling this story, which ends happily, don't worry. But it was beautiful. And this guy who was like throwing shade over here, by the end of the story, he starts kind of leaning in on the back of a chair. Then he turns the chair around and he's kneeling on it. Then he turns it back around and he sits down and he's like leaning forward, listening. Then he finds himself in a small group and he's like sharing his own story. So even the skeptics, once their friends do it or once someone they admire do it, like everyone sees how powerful
that is. You know, I'm sitting here absorbing this and just like, just going, yeah, yeah. I mean, this is the whole, so many things here. The one thing I want to say is like, that's the whole purpose of my platform.
Right.
Is communal, I call it communalization of our pain. Like exactly. Going, oh, we're having this pain. Let's understand that we all have our own and let's share. And you can see in the comments now, people are sharing their pain. And that validation as conscious creatures, we really want someone to witness that suffering. And our culture of medicine is no one sees this,
right.
Not even the person suffering. So you develop these layers of denial and compensation. And then one day you go to a rave and you do ecstasy or something, right. And you tell a perfect stranger that you cry yourself, you know, to sleep after your onc rotation, whatever it is, right? And it almost takes like a truth serum to get it out, to beat it out of you.
Exactly.
Why should we do that to ourselves when we have the capacity? And what you said about administrators, they're always telling us stuff like, you should be more mindful and get a massage. And you know what? Maybe make sure to take your vacation.
Right. We take your wellness so seriously that we reserved parking for you.
That's right.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
How about this? Set up something like what you're doing, right? And here's the thing. Well, how do you monetize a storytelling session? Yeah. Because, you know,
I'll tell you how. Your doctors don't quit.
Shazam.
They don't burn out.
Number one.
They stay. They love working there. They're happy. They do better patient care.
And number two, they stay human beings, which is what I thought the idea is we do well financially when we do good for our patients. How can we do good for our patients if we're robots under 30 layers of denial and we're, you know, denying this thing hurts? So this is another funny thing. So you're with Vituity.
Yeah.
So far, we've highlighted like, I don't know, three of your docs, and every single one is doing something interesting. Mm-hmm. These are the kind of stories we want to bring via the show. It's fantastic. Now, here's the question. So how's the podcast? Have you gotten a lot of feedback on it? Real talk.
Yes. So the podcast, ultimately, we were doing these sessions live and people kept saying, where do I hear the rest of these? And I was like, what do you mean the rest of these? They're like, you can't just be, you know, listening to these and not doing anything with them. Where's the book? Or like, where's the movie? And I was like, oh, I don't know. So we decided to start this podcast. So when we go to these live sessions, we record them now and we get people's permission. They sign their life away and they give me their firstborn child and all that stuff. And then I take their story and we put it in a podcast. So if you want to listen to it, it's not hard to find. Like, name your platform of choice for podcasting, including YouTube. You can find it there. Just look for Real Talk. Do yourself a favor and add Alicia Kurtz. A-L-I-C-I-A, last name K as in koala, U-R-T-Z as in zebra.
Like Colonel Kurtz from Heart of Darkness.
Yeah, pretty much.
Really good guy. Good friend of mine. Highly recommend.
Everyone loves him.
Yeah. So...
Hero of that book, so, I think, was the...
I think before we wrap the formal show and go to the comments, I think we should have a call to action. I think the call to action is definitely check out the podcast, definitely check this stuff out. But how about starting something like this in your group, no matter what you do? Let's say you're a respiratory therapist. How about
you go and start a group for respiratory therapists because you guys see some crazy ish. And, you know, you can, are you willing to like share best practices?
Absolutely. So I have a document that I use that anybody who's interested, you want to do this at your place, email me. So you can get me at my first name dot last name, but the easier way, realtalk@vituity.com. So there you go.
What
there
a shameless plug.
It's so shameless.
I love it.
Yeah, realtalk@vituity.com. Send me an email. I'm super happy. I love the thanks for the RT shout out. Go respiratory therapist.
That's right. I know. They're the most misunderstood people on the planet.
It's true.
But next really, to the lab techs.
Yeah. Let us know. Let us get you some info so you can start this at your site. Let me talk to your medical staff officer, your administrators. I'm very convincing. Listen, let me talk to them.
The thing about introverts is they shall rule the world.
They shall.
And, you know, it's almost...
we're in so much trouble.
It's almost never. It's almost never that I've done a show where the guest has just been like, Shazam! And I'm just like, I'm going to chill. The only exception is Denise Brown, who's like sitting right here.
Denise Brown, we did liver rounds with.
That's
animal.
Right. That's right. So, all right, guys. So hit share, hit like. Now we're going to go to the comments. What do we got, Lady Denise? There's still a lot here. Danny Coach. I've dealt with so much after being an RN for 30 years. I was hit hard with reality this week. Got a bad diagnosis that spun my world around. See, and so, Danny, I'm sorry to hear that. I hope you're going to be okay. But I would say this, like, who do you talk to when you worry that your own colleagues are going to be a-holes because they're so shut down, right? Whereas if you have this culture of openness and acceptance and, oh, we talk about our baggage instead of letting it fester, that's so much more conducive to, you know, being healthy and healing, right?
One of the things we say about Real Talk is that it gives power back to being vulnerable. I think people, like you were
some
talking...
Brene Brown level-ish right there. Yeah,
but you were talking about how we don't show our patients. I do. I cry with my patients. Mm. When their kids are dead, when they're whatever, I cry. I sit there,
weak,
I hold their hand. No,
not
and
strong.
I cry. And what I say is, I'm sorry I couldn't have fixed this, and my heart is broken for you. And then I just sit there. And sometimes I cry or I don't. If they want to hug, I hug them. I just sit.
So beautiful, man.
But it's different, right?
It is different.
And then honestly, like, I feel better. I feel like I'm not a jerk that was like, sorry, the chaplain will be in a minute. Let us know if you need anything.
So there was recently, you know, relating to this, there was recently an article about Epic by a young physician who runs another podcast.
Yeah.
And she was basically saying the very language used by the interface in Epic. Mm-hmm. And forget, just substitute any EHR. Let's not pick on Epic, although I hate them.
We hate them all the same.
Do you know why I hate EHR people? I actually love the people. I love the people. I hate the leadership, and I'll tell you why. Because they treat us, frontline caregivers, like we're some kind of Luddites that just don't... If we just got with the program and learned to click the boxes, everything would be okay. It's like, you know what? I used to program in assembly language in the 80s while you were still like wiping your butt with like, you know, diaper wipes. Like, don't tell me I'm a Luddite. I'm telling you...
I was still using diaper wipes.
I recognize a good... I recognize, I'm old, son. I recognize a good interface. And and the thing is, so this kind of, this being with our patients, being vulnerable, showing them vulnerability, it starts with even our language of medicine is so detached from humanity that maybe we should think about the interface we present and are presented with.
Absolutely.
Let's see here. Oh, you got one? Yeah. Here, come on, just tell it into the mic, girl.
This is Denise.
What's up,
my people? What up, Denise Brown? You remember her from such hits as Liver Rounds?
Oh, yeah. So Rowan Keating, I think, has a really good one. It's, how do you cope with the pure apathy of those around you? Because I think that's really what we're talking about, is apathy as a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And it's really an ineffective one. So tell us what you think about that.
There's nothing ineffective about apathy, okay? It's very effective. I find it to be highly an engaging way of doing nothing. Yeah, no, no. What are your thoughts? So, I've yelled about this recently.
Interesting. I think there is actually a time and a place for apathy. I do. I think that everybody goes through their own journey with, like, our job is really hard. I've heard you talk about moral injury before. I've heard lots of, it's really hard to take all of that in all the time. And I think it's okay sometimes for us to need to be in a space where we just don't have feelings. I think prolonged apathy is not good for anyone. I think it's destructive for the individual and for everybody around you. But I do want to give just a small pause that, like, I have days where I just can't even anymore. Mm. And if I let myself feel, I might have an actual emotional breakdown in the middle of the ER. And so I just kind of have to be a little rougher around the edges. And that's just how I'm going to get through it. And that's okay. But I think, you know, big picture, it's not a good solution. Long-term.
You want to hear a secret because no one's watching? except for 250 people. Do you feel it, by the way? Do you ever feel it? I don't feel it. I feel apathy? Like I'm just talking. No, not apathy. I feel like I can't. Can you feel apathy or is that an oxymoron? It's more like you're just apathetic. You're being, I don't know, it's very meta. So I never, when I'm talking to my Z-Pac here, I don't feel like, I feel like I'm talking to a couple people. You don't realize there's a big audience there.
No, in which I thought there was like four.
Right. That's what it feels like. And so you tend to be a little more open than you might normally be. So I'm going to be open right now because I think you're the only one here. So you're talking about like when you have to be apathetic and kind of put on the brakes, right? Yeah. So you don't want to lose it in front of X, Y, and Z, but it's okay to lose it in X, Y, and Z. So, you know, the end of Moana. Have you seen Moana?
I love that movie.
It's beautiful.
It's nice to see Disney movies that aren't about teenagers getting married. It's so great.
Yep.
No love interest in that movie.
It's about friendship and overcoming loss.
Loyalty.
And learning who you are. It's beautiful.
Finding your tribe.
Show your kids that movie, people. Moana. Mm-hmm. That's a family
one. One of our biggest hits was You're Welcome about nurses. You know, what can I say except you're welcome for the ice chips, the meds, the food. Hey, CEO, you're welcome because these jacked up staffing ratios got to go.
It's so dumb.
So
I love it. I need to go watch
is.
That one.
It is. Now, what was I telling a story about? Oh, yes. Vulnerability. Yeah.
Moana.
So end of that movie is a scene where the bad guy spirit is this flaming volcano of anger and hate, and Maui's fighting him, going head on.
Oh, he's a CFO. I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. I actually love our CFO, just to be very clear. I was just being a dork.
He's counting the beans, man.
Yeah. So he's a flaming.
Maui.
Angry man.
Maui.
Yeah.
Maui is deeply hurt inside.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was abandoned as a child. So this flaming demon, and then she realizes who this thing is. And to disarm this, she walks the ocean parts and she walks through and the music and she's singing. She's like, I see you. This is not who you are. You know, you're wrapped up in the, you're lost in the sauce, woman. And this beautiful denouement. And I always am like, I can't feel this right now because my kids are not allowed to see me cry. So I'm like, look at this. This is a dumb ending. It's a dumb ass ending right here. And so today I just signed up for Disney Plus, right? Because my supporters were like, you got to get Disney Plus, son. It's $5.99. I'm like, that sounds dumb. Then I looked at what you get. All the Star Wars, all the Avengers, all the Pixar, 4K. I was like, uh-huh. So I signed up for it. And I'm sitting at home. The kids are gone. I'm like supposed to do this thing today. So I'm like, I'm going to watch Moana's in 4K. I'm going to watch that ending. And I was like, I'm going to let myself feel this properly. Oh my God, I was a mess. It was so awesome. I felt so much better. Mm-hmm. So this again gets nicely full circle to what you're doing. Yeah. I'm so happy that you did that. And I'm so happy it happened in Fresno.
Yes.
Which
Fresno?
When I first left Fresno and when I was 18, I went to Berkeley and I wrote a song on my guitar called Fresno, Love It or Leave It. I left.
I left too. I left too.
I have a lot of love for the 559. Do not let any Fresno hate be conveyed here.
Nickel, nickel, nine.
I lived there when it was the 209, you know what I'm saying? And then they had to add 559. Yeah. My parents' number changed. I was like, what?
Yes.
You guys have seen me live cast from my parents' estate in Clovis. Like 2.5 acres of ratchet orange orchard with like a well, and there's like no power half the time. It's great, man. And Cynthia Ejogu says, Clovis and Fresno is the best. That's right. And I like that you conflated them into an is, because they are. They're just Clovis Fresno.
It's very true.
It's very true.
Somebody on here asked about,
come with
they
it.
Kind of, a couple people asked us to finish the apathy conversation. I'm just really excited that I'm actually able to kind of read the comments. You're much better at it than me. I'm like, so many things are popping.
Kind of nailed it. You're kind of going to take my job. I'm going to be like every like a weird middle America person that's like, they're coming to take my job. jobs. This is her. No, she's the immigrant.
Yeah, yeah. I immigrated here from Sacramento.
It's back basically down. A developing country.
Full circle. It's developed, mostly now developed. But anyways, somebody said, so what's the cutoff for apathy and how do you deal with it? Because I think what I will tell you is that if you're watching this right now, you're not the apathetic person. Like, we're kind of preaching to the choir. None of you in the ZPAC who are sitting here building a community, listening to the things he has to say and letting me join you, like, this is not the group that's apathetic and given up, okay? Obviously, in case you can't tell, I'm an extremely candid individual. Like, I don't have a filter. I literally think everything I feel is like right here.
Can I do some frontal release?
All the time.
Start snouting.
Anyways, so
didn't mean to interrupt.
Suckling,
yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Let's go through all of them now.
Yeah, okay, let's read more. Anyways, so. This all started, this is like, you know, bare your soul moment because it feels like it's just the four of us in this room. But, so there was a time when I, right at Fresno, we mentioned it's a huge trauma center, super crazy. And there was a guy there with a beautiful tattoo. I didn't know anything about tattoos till I moved to the Central Valley. And now I know everything about tattoos. That's like a thing. And he had this gorgeous sleeve. I mean, like, this thing was probably $2,000. All said and done. I now know about prices of tattoos also. Really expensive, intricate, beautiful, some 3D work. Like, really, this person spent a lot of time and their hard-earned money. It's like a hardworking American person. Did some substances and then thought the best way to get back into their house was to punch their arm through a wall or through the door that had the glass panel and cut up all their arm. So they come in real intoxicated, covered in glass, whatever. One of their substances of choice is heroin. So initially, like, real sleepy, kind of waking up, was sort of not very nice in the middle, and then turns out fine. And I overhear what the nurses are saying, which isn't very nice. General phrasing that's not very nice. And so I was just like trying to talk to this guy, and he's getting agitated, and he's like on edge, and he's just like, "Blah blah blah, you mother effing this," and bad words, and blah blah. And the nurses are like, "Sir, if you don't," right? Like, everyone's kind of doing verbal escalation, which is like just kind of one over the other. And finally, I just yelled out like, "Hey, my brother does effing heroin," and the room was like, and everyone kind of looks around, and I was like, "Listen to me," and I pointed at the patient. I was like, "My little brother does heroin. I am not judging you for being drunk or for doing drugs or whatever. I just need you to calm down so I can fix that gorgeous tattoo. That's it." And he calmed down, obviously, because like that was such an awesome thing. I'm just kidding. No, but he calmed down. He lays down. I tell the nurses, like, "Can you?" "No, I said the F word. Somebody asked." "No, I said it." In real life in Fresno, we say the F word sometimes. It's okay. And with that patient, it actually helped because it made me so normal, right? Like, I'm not up here because I'm a doctor. I came from the same place as every one of my patients did. I was not from like a wealthy background, none of that stuff. And so I think he got that clearly. And then over time, like, I sat there and I sewed probably for like 2 hours. Things residents can do that attendings can't, right? Like, I spent 2 hours fixing this sleeve. And I could have been sloppy. I wasn't, because it was beautiful. And I just thought about like how much time and energy and thought and love went into this tattoo. And I spent 2 hours with this guy. And by the time we're done, he's actually like awake now and talking and saying, "I'm really sorry. Like, I was kind of an ass." And I was like, "I don't know. We weren't very nice to you. Like, what goes around comes around. Shrug, right? Sorry." And there were a couple of the nurses that were involved were these like old salty trauma nurses. And this one PA that was particularly salty on the trauma service, who I love.
Oh, I know who that is.
Yeah, right?
I know who
he
that
is. He works at your hospital too?
No. I know him in Fresno.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh, you probably.
The trauma, yeah.
Stop saying detail. Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, I know who. I know. Really anyway, salty. Yeah, really salty. Yeah.
And at the end of it, they came up to me and they were like, "Is that true about your brother?" And I said, "Yes, it is." And they were like, "How old is he?" And at the time, he was like, not even 21. I'm always like 20, you know. "Well, where is he?" I'm like, "I don't know. He goes in and out of like hospitals. I find out when he's on a Narcan drip. Sometimes he's in jail. And then I just don't know where he is for a while." And yes, it's true. And that's why, like, I don't say drug addict. I don't talk about, you know, "You should quit, you loser." I talk about, like, "Did you know we have a needle exchange? Like, do you ever think about HIV, hepatitis? Do you know about alcohol swabs? Can I give you some?" All that kind of stuff. And some of those nurses came back way, way, way later in my life, like a year later, and told me, I am really sorry that I ever treated people with drug abuse problems like that. Like, I look at you now and I just think to myself, like, her brother, like this kid, this me being a kid, right? To nurses, we're all kids, the residents, but this kid comes in here, she busts her butt and she's nice to everyone and, you know, she does her best or whatever. And like, her family is just like this. And like, how could I, you know? So I don't think that you can fix apathy with a magic bullet, but I think the more willing you are, you, like the ZPAC community who's here supporting each other already, like the more that you're willing to stand together and not perpetuate this iron doctor, no feelings thing, and the more real you're willing to be and the less afraid you are of who you really are and where you come from, and the more you're willing to share that and be proud of it, then the people around you are going to have a much harder time being apathetic because it radiates off of you. Like, everyone can feel the energy when you are just such a human, fully alive, doing a job that you love in healthcare. Everyone can feel that. So I don't have a magic cure for apathy, but I think the best thing you can do is be the kind of person that just doesn't allow that to be around you.
Mm. Wow. That was awesome. And you know what? Now I feel like I have to outdo it by showing you my tattoo. It's a tramp stamp.
Oh my God.
And it says too legit to quit.
Does it really say
is
that?
Is it faded? I don't.
Oh, the ink is fading.
It's light pink. It's light pink. That's why.
I had them do it in a off-white and it matched my skin perfectly. But when I get old and pale, it's going to show up. And just as I'm dying, I'm going to tell the hospice, you know, person, I'm going to be like,
yes,
roll me over. Pull down my pants, and they're gonna see too legit to quit. Yeah. And you know what? I think
it's in emojis, actually. It's the hand like this, and then like the power.
Yeah, you took it to the next level. That's really that's exactly
and
right.
It ends with like the Hank.
Ends
pile,
with the, yes. The little. Oh,
somebody. I did see a couple of comments. No, I'm not bashing nurses.
Oh, I saw
guys.
That too.
Come on.
Whoever said they were bashing nurses? No. Okay. But yeah. let's unpack that for 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
How defensive is that person that they assume that every doctor, when they talk about nurses, is bashing nurses? Yeah, it means they've been through some stuff. It means that their doctors are not nice. It means that they've not had good interactions. It means that our culture of medicine is fundamentally broken, mm-hmm. that they could take what you said and assume it was a nurse bashing thing, right? So we have to understand. And the other thing is, like, people have stopped assuming good intent in internet conversations.
Yes.
Like, you could replace nurse with any other.
Thank you, Risa.
Person.
She's like, I stood up for you.
Oh yeah, Risa.
Thank you.
Risa's like my number one supporter in chief, man. And she's a nurse in Utah.
Nice.
And yeah. And yeah, that's right, Selena. They're not a supporter. That's right. You're not a supporter. You don't know me.
Anyway. And I think it's an interesting point. Like, I think that goes along with this stupid pride-filled thing we do in the culture of healthcare. And I don't mean medicine, I mean everyone in healthcare.
All of it, yeah.
That you can never be wrong, that you're the smartest one in the room, that you've got no room for improvement, that a negative thing that somebody acknowledges is immediately attacking you and you got to attack them back. Like, dude, we got to stop doing that.
How fear-based is our culture of medicine, do you think? I'd say like 99.9.
It started in medical
units.
School. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? Every day of your life is the most scary thing you've ever watched.
I'm so glad you said that.
It's so scary.
I tell the story like I had like I'm not typically a sweaty, swarthy Persian man.
Yes.
In medical school, I'm just a swarthy Persian man. In medical school, I had my pits were soaked every single day for no reason.
Oh, yeah.
And I would have PVCs and I couldn't figure. Every day was the scariest day of my life. Mm-hmm. Especially when we got into third year and we had to go on to rotations. Dude, I started at the county, San Francisco General, obstetrics. People still wonder. I have like this weird chip on my shoulder about obstetrics. And it's because I've never been so scared in my life.
Agreed.
And so we're so fear-based, we don't want to show any weakness because they will pounce on it. Or the perception is they'll pounce on it. So what you've done is you've ripped a hole with your little magical knife in the fabric of reality and you've let in like the actual love and understanding that the universe is actually made out of to pervade a space that has denied it exists. And yet is predicated its entire purpose on helping relieve suffering.
Absolutely.
So what have we got to fix it?
Yes. And you have to be willing to go it alone. Like, depending on where you work or where you are, don't be afraid to be the first person. Like, people will get used to you. I'm speaking from
speaking
experience.
From personal experience. Hey,
they will get used to you.
I'll say this. They never got used to me, all right? They just got rid of me. I'm like, yeah. I'm out.
But when you look back, like, if you work in healthcare in any way, whether it's, you know, respiratory therapy, nurse case manager, you know, nurse practitioner, PA, doctor, doesn't matter, any of us, there were people who scared the bejesus out of you along the way. And everyone thought, oh, they must be a great doctor because they yell and they're tough or they're a good RT or whatever. And then when you really think about who shaped you, who influenced you, who made you awesome, who, when you're falling asleep, if you close your eyes and you imagine being the exact person you want to be, like, who do you imagine? It's not those people. It's the people like my attending, Kurt Brueggemann, that came in and said, you had a rough case, let's go on a walk in the parking lot. It's the people like at my medical school, Dr. Kohler, Dr. Mickelfeld, or Dr. Blair, who used to tell all of us, like, think about how this affects you. Let yourself show who you are. Relate to your patient. Don't be afraid to do some small talk. Like, that's allowed. You know, they want develop that relationship. You will get more from it than they will. And that never yelled at you. And then if you made a mistake, would say, how did you make that mistake? Explain it to me. How do we fix your thinking so you don't make that mistake again? It was never the people who yelled at me or who instilled the fear of rounds in me. Like, those people are not the ones I don't even remember their names. Most
they're fun, but you don't remember.
No,
yeah. I remember the community doc who was rounding the night in the CCU and pulled up the chart and was like, hey, goes to the whole nurse's station. Who was the intern who wrote this note? And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I was like, that's my patient.
I don't know. That guy quit.
Yeah. I don't know. They found him at a tattoo parlor getting too legit to quit. Tramp stamp. So I raised my hand. I'm like, oh, it was me. I'm sorry. What did I do wrong? Because I'm just expecting this conditioning, right? Mm-hmm. And she goes, hey, I just want to tell everybody here that the assessment and plan you wrote, which is the only part of the note that matters, was really transcendent because you said exactly what you were thinking. You explained it cohesively. You put in physiology in there and you actually wrote about the patient's humanness in your note. Who does that? I want to call you out. And of course, everybody there is like, you're just a community attending. Shut the hell up. Like, no one cares what you think. And I'm just sitting there going, oh my gosh, someone said something nice about something I care about, which is my ability to think clearly and communicate and this kind of thing. So yeah, it's those kind of things. Yeah.
Like, where's the part where you start yelling?
After that, she threw a scalpel at me.
Yes. That's how I thought that story was going to end. Statistically speaking.
Statistically, it's more likely that a scalpel ends up getting thrown. Oh, man. So, guys, should she be my permanent co-host? I don't know. Sacramento's
not far. I
got to
go liven up the Sactown.
I mean, yeah. I'll come down to Sactown.
You should.
The Bay Area and back
down. We should get you to tell a story on our podcast.
Oh, I'll tell stories.
Well, no. Like the real talk story.
Oh.
Like okay, I've got just two quick Fresno ones. One is, one time someone literally had a Buzz Lightyear up their rectum. The X-ray.
Infinity and beyond.
Had the wings out. And everyone was like, the to infinity and beyond jokes. Like, I can't even.
Non-stop.
I cannot even.
You cannot even.
And the other was that I had a patient who was very, very high on meth, which makes you psychotic. He ends up in the psych area. He's eventually calming down. I go in, I'm like the fifth doctor to have him. And I say, you know, you okay now? He's like, what happened to me? I'm like, it was meth, you know? Well, I have this girlfriend. She's crazy. She does this thing. And at the end, I'm like, you know what, bro? I'm going to say the B word. I'm sorry. But I was like, just no more meth and no more crazy bitches. And I come, the nurse, like, in the psych area calls me a couple hours later and says, can you come in here? But, like, sneak in. So I sneak in the side. And she's like, look around the corner. I look around to where the patient is. He's sitting on his gurney. He's like, no more meth, no more crazy bitches. No more meth, no more crazy bitches.
You incepted that mother effer. You were like, oh, you're like Leonardo DiCaprio. They're like, can it be done? Can Inception be done? He's like, I've done it.
Life highlight.
No more meth.
Forever.
No more crazy bitches. Wapner. 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 That's unbelievable. That is Fresno, love it or leave it. I'm going back.
It was so
actually
Fresno.
For Christmas. See my parents.
It is the boomerang city.
It really is. The gravitational well of Fresno, the event horizon is so inescapable.
Yes.
You're trying. You're like, I'm almost at light speed. I could get out of here. And then like McDonald's calls and is like, would you like to be the manager? And I'm like, yes, I'm back.
Yeah. Now I have an excuse. It's awesome.
This was more fun than I ever could have imagined I would have with another doctor, because doctors
I drank
are
a beer
so lame.
First because I was nervous. Yeah. Just the one, though. I was at this pizza place across the street, and they were like, did you know happy hour just started? And I was like, I know now.
You went to Pachi's?
I did. They gave me it was beautiful. Anyway.
So good. Yeah,
we're going
Pachi's
back there,
is so. Awesome. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Great.
Thank you all for being so nice.
That
thank
was,
you.
That was, I'm.
And listen to the podcast. Real yeah. Talk, Alicia Real talk. Kurtz, KURTZ.
Excellent. Guys, definitely check it out. We'll put a link in there. If there's a link on iTunes, that'd be
there's
perfect.
There's so many links.
Thank you to Vituity for making this happen. Yes. And let's just show Denise back.
Denise.
Hello.
Yay. You guys. Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Deepak. We love
you. Oh, we love you
Marco,
guys,
come
too.
On here.
Marco
this
Paul.
This is the podcast producer, Marco. Hello. Say hi.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this because I'm confident in my heterosexuality.
Good.
Marco is a very handsome man.
Yeah.
If I did the right thing and actually was at least bisexual, okay, I wouldn't have a chance.
It's because of the
tramp stamp. It really turns certain guys off. All right.
If it had a bulldog at the end, though, you'd be in.
Oh, mm-hmm. Fresno.
Fresno.
The Fresno State Fresno. Bulldogs. Guys, I love you. Thanks to Alicia.
Thanks
to Denise. Thanks to Marco. Thanks to God for making the universe, okay? I don't know why I said I'm
feeling... potassium 3.4.
Potassium! And we out! Hey, it's Dr. Z. Thanks for getting through the whole episode. That's a huge accomplishment. And so at this point, I just got to ask you for a few favors, because it just helps us so much if you leave a review on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe. It just really helps the algorithm to get this message out to others. The second thing is email me, hello@zdogmd.com. I get all these emails personally. I can't respond to them all, but I need to hear your voice, because especially on podcast, we don't have a comment section. And I want to hear how this episode affected you, what you'd like to hear in the future, what you think we got wrong, what we think we got right, anything, or just say hi. So that's really powerful. And the third thing is, financially, it helps us a lot to support the show in any way you can. And if you go to zdogmd.com/supporters, you can join our supporter tribe on your favorite platform, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, wherever. What that will get you on those platforms is live shows with me that are exclusive for supporters, and access to our Zoom meetings where we talk about awakening realization and we share with each other our own experience. It's a powerful group effect. It's a community, really. And we support and love each other and share, again, through our own experience, how we're waking up. So, and that ripples out into systems, into transforming healthcare and education and government. So it really starts with us. So join us there if you can. Again, zdogmd.com/supporters. And I'm so grateful to have you with us.